Good afternoon. I'm Cal Winslow, your host. I'm happy to be able to offer a new series of programs this summer. I'm calling the series an antinomian hour. I'm using the word antinomian, an old concept, a very old concept, sort of historic line of dissent. I'm using it to describe people who work against the grain, who think for themselves, people who believe that doing the right thing is the important thing. So this program consists of a series of in-depth interviews that are broadcast here on KZYX, Mendocino Community Radio, every Thursday this summer at 1 p.m. Today, our guest is Clement Papazian. Papazian is a licensed clinical social worker who specializes in psychiatric emergency and outpatient psychiatry at Kaiser Permanente's Oakland Medical Center. He was up to sort of University of California at Berkeley. And he's also the chapter president of the Behavioral Health Unit at Kaiser, a unit of the National Union of Healthcare Workers. This is one of the authors of the union's groundbreaking report on mental health, Care Delayed, Care Denied. It's a study of the delivery of mental health care at Kaiser in California. And Papazian also serves on his union's executive committee. Good morning, Clem. Is it okay if I call you Clem?
Yes, that's what everyone calls me.
All right, great. Great to have you with us today. Clem, you've told me that you've been doing this work for about 26 years now, so maybe we can begin with just a little about what you do, what your work is at Kaiser, and then maybe why this work is important in terms of Kaiser's mission.
Thanks, Cal.
He's
your listeners on this program. I am, as you say, I've been working for Kaiser Permanente for 26 years, and my main role is psychiatric emergency, and what that really involves is being available in an outpatient clinic for people who come in with emergent needs. We get referrals from the Kaiser membership. People walk in off the street into the clinic. We get referrals from the medicine department, doctors, primary care doctors who send folks into our clinic who are in crisis. We get calls from the emergency department, and we have to be available for consults to the emergency. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with your listeners on this program. I am, as you say, I've been working for Kaiser Permanente for 26 years, and my main role is psychiatric emergency, and what that really involves is being available in an outpatient clinic for people who come in with emergent needs. We get referrals from the Kaiser membership. People walk in off the street into the clinic. We get referrals from the medicine department, doctors, primary care doctors who send folks into our clinic who are in crisis. We get calls from the emergency department, and we have to be available for consults to the emergency service. We get referrals from other mental health clinicians in the clinic. So it's a very permeable service, and you know, we get calls from advice nurses and really pretty much the range of healthcare folks that basically refer to our service. So I'm in and out of the emergency room all day and night. I work a couple of nights of overnight every week, and we are the front line for folks who come in with psychiatric emergencies, and what we would define as an emergency is people who are either dangerous to themselves, dangerous to others, or are so gravely disabled with psychosis that they really can't function very well in their daily lives. So it's impactful from the standpoint that if the general services, the routine services, are impacted, then what we see is, and when I say impacted, meaning that people can't get in a timely fashion, what we end up seeing is much higher volume, much higher acuity in the emergency services. In my corner of the service delivery program, if folks are encumbered with their routine services, then pretty much everything then gets impacted. And this is not only at Oakland, at the Oakland facility, but pretty much throughout all of Kaiser's healthcare network.
So,
perhaps they're diagnosed with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder or acute depression. And so then we get those folks who really are more chronic patients. We get people who come in who have come to the attention of law enforcement or healthcare officials because they're so gravely disabled that they present as with deviant behavior in the community, and so we get those folks who we often see in the emergency department. We get people who are seen in primary care who have psychiatric circumstances secondary to healthcare or medical problems. So it's really quite a range. Pretty much anything that you could imagine an individual framing as a personal crisis, they may define it as a crisis, which might be different from how we would define it as a crisis. But we take all comers, pretty much, and assess the circumstances and then try and make a plan within the range of services that we offer in these clinics, which can be anywhere from groups and classes, medication. We have a partial hospitalization for folks that we really want to keep a much closer look at, and who we want to see with more frequency because they're so fragile. So, it's a mixed bag, and Kaiser does serve the general population, so we're really trying to serve the range of emergencies that that people either define within themselves or that are defined by the healthcare officials that they come in contact with.
Okay, maybe I could ask you to bring us up to speed a little about Kaiser Permanente itself. For my sake, for the listeners' sake, we don't have Kaiser here in Mendocino County, but statewide, I think Kaiser has 9 million members. That's more people than most states have, and it's an enormously profitable operation. I see that its profits in the first quarter alone of 2014 were $2.1 billion, and it was said that that was almost as much as the last year altogether. So what about Kaiser? Could you just do you have to be a member of Kaiser to be seen by you, Clem?
That's right. Kaiser Permanente is a very deep offering. It's widespread throughout California, the Atlantic states. It's in Hawaii. It's in the Pacific Northwest. But they are making billions of dollars. There's some estimates that the amount of money that they bring in profits, it rivals the budget of some countries even. They're doing extremely well, and they've been promoted as a potential for sort of a national healthcare model. They are very deeply embedded in the community and in the healthcare community, and basically they are the primary vendor for many employers who basically buy these services for their employees. So we have quite a deep penetration within the community in California and even in other states. So they are a significant player in the healthcare world, in the healthcare community, and they really have a great potential to do a lot of good. If I can sort of deviate a little bit here.
Sure.
Personally, I'm what I term a Kaiser baby. My father was a Kaiser Permanente pediatrician in Southern California in Fontana, and for many years. And my entire life, if you will, has been financed by, healthcare-wise, has been financed by this organization. So, you know, I'm now an employee of Kaiser myself, and I feel like that they have a tremendous potential to do a great deal of good, not only in healthcare but in mental health care. And so, I'm certainly not a Kaiser basher. I'm a proponent, but like any organization that gets to be a certain size, I think that they require the input of their critics. Because what we all know about mega corporations is that eventually they move in the direction of the bottom line, and that's kind of what we're seeing at Kaiser, is that more and more of the resources go into the pockets of the executives. And my feeling is that the critics really are there to push back against that, to find the sweet spot, and really keep them focused on their mission, which is to really deliver healthcare. They are considered to be a nonprofit organization, so as a technicality, we really feel like more of those resources should go into care delivery and less into the pockets of the corporate executives. So part of what we're attempting to do is steer the organization back to its primary core corporate value, which is care delivery.
Okay, and again, I noticed that the CEO of Kaiser Permanente, I think it was last year, had a salary of nearly $8 million annually, and he retired this year or at the end of last year with multiple pensions, and it's not so different, I guess, in the other big hospital chains. I know that this is kind of just an area of speculation, but why is so much money going into the administrative end of the system?
That's probably not a question that I'm well equipped to answer. It's sort of the way of corporate America, and Kaiser is a mega healthcare corporation, and so I think that what we see happening in the general business community is also happening at Kaiser. And the only difference that I see really is that Kaiser has a higher moral imperative to give back to the community that supports them, and to stay focused on their mission, which is care.
And it spends a lot of time telling us that that's exactly what it does, right? It has a big public relations.
It spends a lot of time and a lot of advertising dollars basically telling the community that they're all about quality and they're all about Thrive and they're all about sort of giving back. And so my feeling is that our work is kind of keeping the organization honest, keeping them focused on their core corporate value as it's being espoused in the public.
Okay, now the National Union of Healthcare Workers represents people in your line of work, also nurses, some service and technical workers around the state, and it has been involved in bringing to light some problems in Kaiser's delivery of mental health care in particular. Now, were you involved in the production of their pamphlet, Care Delayed and Care Denied? Is Care Denied?
Yes, there were a number of us clinicians that were involved in that. I personally have been involved in trying to get Kaiser to pay attention to their timely access to mental health services for many, many years. Our group formed a union in 2000. I was in the vanguard of that leadership from 2000 to about 2007, and we worked tirelessly to bring to light the problems with Kaiser's timely access to mental health services. And let me just deviate for a second and give you some idea of what I'm talking about. Basically, if you come in to Kaiser as a routine patient, not an emergency patient, but as a routine patient, and you have an expectation that you are going to get some kind of a dosage of individual psychotherapy, and the general public has an idea of what that means. They may not have the sophistication and the expertise to know exactly what all the parameters that go into that, but basically people have an expectation that they come in, that they get assigned to a mental health professional, that they sit down with that professional for a series of visits, and that they get an adequate dosage of psychotherapeutic intervention to help them with their problem. And what we found was that of the vast majority of patients that would come in would be seen for an initial visit, but what would end up happening is that they would get either referred to a group or class, that they would get referred for medication, but that expectation of a beneficial dosage of individual and return visit psychotherapy was lacking. And, you know, many of us began to notice that, you know, this was just throughout the organization, and we started to try and work within the company to try to expose this, to really begin to allow them to work with us to change that. And so I got involved in regional work with management over many years. In fact, there was a committee that was generated specifically with the purposes of trying to come up with the algorithm for, that supply and demand model. In other words, what is the adequate staffing to provide those kinds of services? And we worked probably close to a decade. We'd come up with a work product, only to have that work product put on a shelf and a new committee convened under new regional management leadership. And what we began to realize is that the company was really not serious about making these changes. They were kind of paying lip service to it and, you know, keeping these committees going endlessly, but really not changing anything. So in one of these meetings, I basically said, look, the therapist community, the labor community in Kaiser will not continue to stand for this problem. The patients deserve better. The providers who have gone to school and worked hard to do this work will not put up with it, and we really need to do something. And if you won't do it from within, then we will begin to work externally. And that's, in fact, exactly what happened. And so we, in probably about 2009, we worked with our union to really explore what kind of timely access issues there were. And what it amounts to is an internal revolution on the part of the providers to really go to the state regulators and say, this is a problem, and you need to work with Kaiser to change it. And so that was the genesis of care delayed, care denied. And we really found quite a lot of examples of exactly, you know, what we suspected throughout their network and system of mental health clinics.
Okay, and could you just walk us through, say, a couple of examples of what delay means in terms of care, what you think it means?
Well, the primary, probably the best example is, as I stated earlier, which is you come in for a problem. Let's say you're depressed, or you're having a marital problem, or you've got some kind of a historical issue with trauma or abuse, and you come in you're assigned to a therapist. Now, they don't really seem to have a lot of trouble with the initial visit, and that's because the state regulations really were pretty focused on initial access. And so what the organization attempted to do was to really front load the system with new visits. And so you, in this example, would come in, you would see the therapist is probably assigned 7 or 8 new people a week, and they have to treat those people and offer them some kind of quality services, and then the next week they get another 7 or 8 people. And so what you find is that the therapists are put in a terrible bind. The bind goes like this. You come in, you've got your problem, and because there's not enough resource for return access or treatment resource, as we call it, what ends up happening is that you get assigned to a group or a class, and that is the sum and total of your care. And, you know, the general public comes in, and they're, as I say, of varying degrees of sophistication. They come in, they see their provider, and they are expecting that provider is going to give them the response of an expert. And in fact, what happens is that the provider, because they're so encumbered in their schedule, can't really follow through with the dosage of individual psychotherapy as it's maybe most appropriate or required. They end up in this bind where they're having to sort of refer people onto groups or classes or medication, and folks end up either falling out of treatment altogether, or they're on wait lists that are so long to get in that they fall out. And so what ends up happening is that people don't get the care. Within Kaiser term it rapid access to no care.
Rapid access really, to no care, yeah.
Yeah, and so it really is immoral on just so many levels. And the treatment providers, of course, are caught in this terrible bind. And so the treatment providers at Kaiser are the ones that have escalated this to the point where, you know, now we are really quite vocal and quite prominent in asking external regulators to intervene and help Kaiser really staff up appropriately so that people are getting what it is that they pay for.
This is KZYX, Mendocino County Community Radio. I'm your host, Cal Winslow. Our program today is an antinomian hour. Our guest is the licensed clinical social worker, Clement Parpazian. We've been talking about mental health care and access to that at Kaiser Permanente. And the study, Care Delayed, Care Denied, that can be seen on your website. Is that right, on the National
That's
Union?
On it. Right. That's on the nuhw.org website.
Okay. And I understand that the study actually seems to have something to do with the state regulators actually responding and fining Kaiser. Is that right? Could you tell us about that?
That's right. The state regulators did get involved. They were quite interested in care delayed, care denied work. There were a group of us, probably a dozen providers and leaders, who actually went to Sacramento and sat with the state regulators and basically walked them through the document and answered questions. And that work resulted in a $4 million fine against Kaiser for the problems that were cited. And now, after the fact, Kaiser is in the process of actually trying to appeal that fine, and that is a current legal action that is, it's a public action, and we are in the process of continuing that process of examination, and we are also coming up on nearly a year or more. Actually, I think that came out in 2011, so now we're some years out from when that document was introduced to the regulators, and they are about to review Kaiser for whether or not the problems have been remedied. And those of us working in the trenches know that the problems have not been remedied adequately.
Okay, and shifting gears just a little bit, here's another question I have for you, Clem. Let's simplify it. Why is the union doing this? What's this got to do with the union? The National Union of Healthcare Workers seems to be supporting you, or, I mean, you're the union, so but seems to be supporting right. you in this. But why is this? Doesn't this just rile Kaiser up?
Well, it does. As I said, you know, the National Union of Healthcare Workers has always been focal in working with healthcare providers, and our primary mission, as I've said, is care. You know, this is not a new issue for our mental health workers, and the union, National Union of Healthcare Workers, became involved secondary to our contract dispute with Kaiser in the latest round of contract talks. And our primary focus in those talks was this patient care ask to the organization. And so NUHW really sees that as a component of these contract talks, and so, you know, they are working with the workers, with the labor force, to try to bring about the changes that are of high value and importance to the workers. Interestingly, we started these negotiations with a patient care ask along the lines of what I've been describing to you. Kaiser's response to that was not only to obfuscate, dilute, and deny those problems, but then they also responded with serious and deep benefit cuts, not only for members of our union, but for all of their labor force. And again, of course, that's going to amount to significant cost savings for the organization, more profits for executives. And so these contract discussions, which are sort of more the historic bailiwick of labor unions, has blossomed into not only our prominent patient care asks, but, of course, the other significant benefit cuts that they're wanting to roll out throughout the organization to all of their represented workers.
So it sounds like the NUHW's approach here is different than sort of what we're used to. It seems to be a time when unions, whether they like it or not, are busy making nice with the employers and making concessions and talking about being partners. But if I could put it this way, it sounds like your efforts have been more in toward making partners with the consumers or the public. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, it's both the consumers and the public and the providers that NUHW represents. NUHW is probably distinctive and exceptional insofar as you alluded to, that they really are a member-driven organization. So they are taking their direction from the workers. The workers are prominent in the leadership. The workers are the union. NUHW helps to focus and facilitate our voice, but it really is a member-driven voice, and this sort of stands in stark relief to many large corporate labor unions now that really kind of have effectively carved out the voice of the worker. Without getting too technical, I mean, NUHW's genesis was secondary to them seceding from their mega parent union in 2009, which basically was attempting to carve out the voice of the individual worker and really you know, have decisions made from sort of the national organization that really had very little to do with the workers. Basically, kind of, well, we know best. And, you know, that created quite a rift, and it was within the context of that rift that NUHW was born. And, you know, that's really to our benefit, and I think everything that we have seen at Kaiser is the direct result of NUHW listening to the workers and to what's important to the workers. And in this case, it is the mental health care for paying Kaiser members.
Okay, and just to make it clear, we people who know a little about unions often think about the domination of them by full-time staff, professional unionists, you might say. But you're a leader and a spokesperson for the union, and you work a full, whatever it is, 40-hour week. That's right?
That's right. I'm a full-time clinician. I actually I'm 56. I'm getting close to retirement, so I recently cut back to 8/10. But you know, it's not easy to be in the vanguard of, you know, fighting your employer to do the right thing and continuing to work actively in a, you know, in a clinical role. And I'm certainly not alone in that. And all of the leaders throughout the state, can be described as doing the very same thing. So it's quite stunning when you realize that that these are all mental health workers who, by the way, did not come to this work, to make megabucks. They came to this work and made a lot of sacrifices because of a mission to deliver care. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing is, just how important that is to these care providers, mental health providers, that in addition to trying to work to offer services to patients, they are also, without any compensation, taking a great deal of risk and making a lot of personal sacrifices to really, promote this fight. So it's quite exceptional. And I have a lot of pride in the people that I work with, and these are not folks who came to the table to be activists. These are folks who came to Kaiser Permanente. They're not the entrepreneurs. They're the ones who came to Kaiser to deliver care and to make a wage to care for their families, and that they didn't necessarily want any trouble, and yet this is where we find ourselves. So quite exceptional.
Okay, let's go back to Kaiser then for a few minutes. Kaiser and there are others like it is considered a non-profit corporation, and that gives it certain tax benefits and others benefits, I think. And is that partially bring along with it some obligation to partake in what we might call charitable work? Is that right?
Well, they do. And this is not an area that I have a lot of expertise in. But what I do know is that they get a lot of tax breaks for charitable work, and there are areas within the organization that are offering that kind of charitable work, but my sense is that it's not without a significant payback in terms of the tax breaks that they get.
And my notes say that, and I think this is the California Health Association again, says that Kaiser delivered $240 million worth of charitable care last year, but received $790 million as a result in tax exemptions.
Well, that's what I was trying to say, but diplomatically. That was my understanding. Again, what we're really seeing here is, a primary agenda for their bottom line. And don't misunderstand me. They're a business. I understand that, that a business needs to work to maintain its survivability in the community. They are not a solely charitable organization, but the term nonprofit status does imply that, you know, that the vast majority of the resources go back into care delivery, and that's just really not the case for this organization. It's structured in a very elaborate fashion that really, flies in the face of a charitable, a purely charitable organization. And so our perspective is just simply that that they have the ability to pay for these services more than amply, and that that the business model appears to be keep the mental health services as lean as possible, save on those labor costs times many, many years. You know, I've been doing this work for 26 years. This has been a problem for all of that time. If you can imagine what the multiples are for the cost savings for, not hiring to the level that they need to hire to offer, you know, a robust individual and return visit psychotherapy offering, that is a phenomenal amount of money. So, for a corporation that is, netting billions of dollars per annum, there's just no other way to describe it other than immoral. And so, again, our focus is to really try to bring them back to their core corporate values as it was, started way back in the days when they were, working with shipbuilders, that's their mission, and we have an obligation to hold them to that value.
I have to throw in an opinion. I usually try not to do this so much, but you have said twice now, Clem, that you're worried that these policies are in some way immoral. And my own observations of the members of the National Union of Healthcare Workers, my observations have been that these are quite an amazingly dedicated group of people who are also extremely courageous. I'd like, I guess, listeners to think about what it means to stand up to a corporation the size that we've been discussing and with the resources that we've been discussing call it out in the way that Clem and others have been doing. And I'd have to say, really, for the benefit not just of themselves, they haven't gotten, I think, anything out of it as yet, really, anything directly, but for all of us. Clem, other leading hospitals, I think, like Sutter, California Pacific Medical, the Catholic chains, is there any reason to believe that they act much differently? I know you don't work there, but what do you think?
I tend to think that they don't, and this is basically Kaiser's rationale. When we sort of euphemistically hold their feet to the fire, what the response that we get back is, well, we're just keeping up with the market. I can understand that thinking to some extent. However, Kaiser, in all of their advertising and in their rhetoric to their employees, positions themselves as, we are the leaders. We are the leaders in quality. And you can't take that position as a leader in quality and as a leader in healthcare and then basically say that, we're just keeping up with the market. Leadership means that you look at what the actual need is, you listen to your experts, who, by the way, are the people on the ground, and you make policy and staffing decisions on the basis of what works and not on the basis of, we're just doing what everybody else is doing. I might also point out that for many years, Kaiser promoted a labor and management partnership, and this program was designed to have the employees have as vocal and as prominent a role in program development, with the idea that those folks are experts on what they do. And when we confronted the regional management about their labor and management program, they basically came back to us and said, well, those were aspirational statements, implying somehow that, you know, well, we weren't really serious about conforming to those beliefs. We were just putting those out there because maybe they sounded good or something to that effect. But the bottom line is that if you're going to lead with quality and you're going to say that you are taking your expert employees' qualities, traits, expertise in mind in developing programs and developing staffing algorithms, then that's what you do. You don't necessarily fall back on, well, we're just keeping up with the market, especially when they're putting billions of dollars into the pockets of their executives.
So this is KZYX, Mendocino County Community Radio. I'm your host this afternoon, Cal Winslow. Our guest today, who's been talking about mental health services at Kaiser Permanente, but also more generally, is Clement Parpazian, who's a licensed clinical social worker at Kaiser's Oakland Medical Center. And just before we change subjects again, let me just ask you straight out. You must be concerned about retaliation, you and your fellow critics. Am I wrong that that's always a possibility, or have you found a way to protect yourselves?
It's a great question, Cal. You know, I'm fond of saying that panic is a short-lived emotion. Beyond a certain point, it really becomes more of a lifestyle. So what I mean by that is that initially we had a lot of fear and anxiety about doing this, and there was a retaliation on the part of the organization against many of our leaders. Part of the benefit of going outside of the system and to the state regulators for some of us has been whistleblower protection. So I am less concerned about retaliation now, because past a certain point when you have made a decision and a commitment to blow the whistle and, raise a flag on some of these kinds of problems, then it makes it very difficult, actually, for the organization to come out publicly against you or to act in ways that are even perceived as retaliatory. So I feel pretty confident now. It's been 4 years that we've been embroiled in the struggle, and I think in some ways I may be a little bit more protected because I carry a leadership role. Some of our stewards and some of our rank-and-file members, have experienced retaliation on the part of their local managers, but NUHW is tireless in defending those workers, and we really have, now established a credible counterforce with the organization, and they know now that that we'll respond, and that anything that they do to change things past a certain point will have to be bargained. And so we continue that on many, many fronts without getting too technical. But this fight continues, and we are hopeful that go ahead.
Oh, I say, you've been on strike several times in all of this, haven't you?
We've gone on strike as a region two or three times. I think the South has gone maybe once more than us, Southern California. And my clinic at Oakland, we were the first department to actually go out on strike. So that was fairly unprecedented. So the organization definitely knows the range of our issues. They understand our concerns. They're not ready yet to bargain with us, truly bargain with us. but they are definitely aware of what it is that are our concerns, and it remains to be seen exactly when they're going to really sit down with us and bargain in earnest over these patient care concerns.
So shifting again a bit, here in Mendocino County, our public health mental health services have actually already been privatized, and where I live on the coast, they really hardly exist. And I think it's fair to say that even those who can find who can pay for treatment find it hard to get. And more generally, I saw a report that said that last year, I think it was the Obama's friend, the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, simply ordered the city's health care clinics closed. I know this would just be maybe some speculation again, but what's the problem here, Clem? Do people in authority believe that mental health is not an issue? We said at the beginning of the program that maybe one in six Californians have such issues. Do you have any ideas about that? And are things getting worse?
Well, you know, as we're seeing the general lack of available funds, you know, post 2008 with the economic crisis, I mean, there's just less and less money around for these kinds of services, and I think municipalities in particular are hungry to find places to cut costs, and sadly, mental health services or teachers are kind of are often seen as the low-hanging fruit, and they are often the first ones to be cut. It's certainly no surprise to anybody. I mean, all you have to do is turn on the news. There's multiple examples of the crisis in mental health services, and it's both prominent in the news and a very high need. We're seeing even the crisis in the VA, which is getting a lot of attention. The attention, I think, is good. It's shining a light on the issue. And for corporations like Kaiser, where they have, where they're not encumbered by the same sort of economic pressures, we really think that they should pay attention to the fact that mental health services are so prominent and so needful that they actually become the leaders that they say that they want to be. But yes, to answer your question, I think that the need is great, and I think sometimes that's terrifying because of the potential price tag that municipalities or other entities see in really bolstering these services to the point where they're effective.
And I think there's another, this is probably the wrong word, but another price tag. I've seen a couple of pretty terrible stories in the news recently. One from closer to home up here, the story of the husband of a Sonoma County supervisor, who committed suicide recently. And the supervisor, Shirley Zane, says that in a very angry letter to Kaiser that she believes that Kaiser rations rather than delivers mental health. And then there was a similar case from Point Richmond of a suicide. And I think in one area of Kaiser's jurisdiction, there were six suicides in a short period of time. So this can be about life and death. Is that fair to say?
I think it's very fair to say, and it's a sad commentary. Again, especially for an organization that is so well-heeled, to have these kinds of stories emerging in the news is just, there's just no excuse for it, really. But there are, as I understand it, two class-action lawsuits by patients now, related to the offering at Kaiser. So, you know, again, there are a number of interventions that are happening concurrently that I think are raising the flag on these issues for Kaiser. And my hope, my sincere hope and my belief, actually, is that at some point there will be a business case that the folks at the top will identify that will say something like, you know, we need to do something about this. And we don't know at what point that will occur, but we do know that, you know, as with all things, if there is enough intervention, if there's enough people who raise their voices, if there's enough light shined on the issue from, you know, from multifaceted places in the community, that change then occurs. So we don't know when it will happen, but we know that this problem isn't going away, and that I think is our strongest form of advocacy, because the public won't let it disappear. And, you know, we, the workers at Kaiser are merely reflecting that cry from the public, from the paying Kaiser members who expect a certain level of care.
And could I ask you one thing in relation to those two terrible cases? And that is that a complaint in each case was that the patients, I guess we'd say, were directed to group therapy rather than individual therapy, when it seemed like individual therapy was what was the better way to go. Could you explain what the issues are there with group therapy at Kaiser and individual therapy and medication? Just we have a few minutes left, so you could just tell us how that's worked out.
Well, you know, group therapy is a very effective and powerful modality. Not to take anything away from group therapy, it can be a very, very powerful treatment intervention for patients. But it's not in and of itself an exclusive remedy. In fact, patients also often have to go through a process of individual treatment to be adequately prepared for group therapy. There's some research, quite a lot of research that's coming out now, that's saying that medications are less effective than a solid series and dosage of individual psychotherapy. So, you know, these are adjunctive treatment modalities. They are not necessarily exclusive, and so they work in tandem often. And so that if you're missing one portion of that treatment intervention, then you're effectively not delivering a quality care intervention. And so if the therapists their schedules are so encumbered that they cannot actually deliver an adequate dosage of individual therapy to prepare people for the groups, or as an adjunct to the medication treatment, then what we're seeing is, you know, that they're getting a less than dosage of care, and then we are seeing the result of that in these kinds of problems that unfortunately, you know, have come to the fore in the news. So it's not that one is better than the other. It's that they all need to happen often in tandem, and that is not happening at Kaiser.
I see. And a couple of last things. Any comment on how you think the Affordable Care Act is going to impact upon Kaiser and your work and the issues we've been talking about today?
Well, we're already seeing it. I mean, again, the business model at Kaiser seems to be, well, we'll just wait and see how many more people come before we decide whether we're going to add staff. As opposed to, we know that we're signing up many thousands more people, and we should staff up in preparation for that. So we are already seeing great numbers of new patients, and these are patients often who were uninsured before, and these patients tend to come to the table with, you know, multi-problematic, chaotic backgrounds with much greater need than even the population that Kaiser was serving prior to the Affordable Care Act. So, you know, they are going to require more services, and just more in general. And so we expect that it's going to impact these clinics terribly. And in fact, we being the providers and NUHW, have filed suit against California Covered because Kaiser basically signed up many, many thousands of new patients without that they already can't care for the patients they've got, and now they've signed up many thousands more. So there is a lawsuit against California Covered for precisely this reason, because the organization really has not prepared adequately for the influx of many thousands of new mental health patients, and it's just going to exacerbate the existing problems. So it's, again, as I was saying earlier, it's this is a multifaceted, multi-pronged intervention against the behemoth organization committed to maintaining its bottom line. And, you know, this is just yet another example of how we are going about really bringing them back to their core corporate value of delivering timely, quality mental health services to members that pay handsomely to get those services.
Okay, and you may have just answered my last question, but sir, I don't mind a little repetition on this program. Clem, I think that the Kaiser's nurses are also involved in a fight with Kaiser about, among other things, staffing. And you've been talking about staffing again and again. Maybe just in the last minute we have, just make your case for adequate staffing in healthcare, because it seems to get lost when the corporations talk about what they're doing.
Well, you know, I mean, the primary mission is that folks get care. And, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that if you really ration the primary currency of care, which is people, you know, the people who deliver that care, either the mental health providers or the nurses or the doctors, you know, the more ratcheted down that staffing becomes, the less available it is to the paying public. And so there really needs to be some kind of watchdog for those services to make sure that the bottom line imperative that we see in many corporations isn't outstripping the core value of care delivery. And so whether it's the general public or the actual providers of that care that are sort of raising this alarm, or the state regulators, you know, it needs to be attended to. And unfortunately, these are the ways in which you know, this alarm gets sounded. And it's a process like everything else, and I am confident that we will be successful, and we just want very much for the general public to weigh in and demand that, you know, that the dollars that they're paying for their care services really get used, you know, to provide those people, human beings, who deliver that care.
Well, thank you very much, Clem. Thanks for coming on the show. We've been talking today with Clement Papazian, who is a licensed clinical social worker at Kaiser's Oakland Medical Center. He's one of the authors of his union study, Care Delayed, Care Denied. It's been a great pleasure, Clem. I should tell listeners that they might want to visit the National Union of Healthcare Workers website, which is nuhw.org, to see that report and other very interesting news about the healthcare industry and healthcare workers. So thanks again, listeners, for tuning in this afternoon. This is Cal Winslow, and I'll be back next week at the same time. Good afternoon again.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.